I like my new sunglasses. Won these at America's Incredible Pizza Company the other night. Feeling pretty good about these. Actually, Mary won them. So I thought I'd style them this morning. It's kind of funny because in these lights, I am now completely blind and everything's blue. And it's totally shading the way I see my world. I'm going to take them off and put them here because they're going to be a little reminder this morning. We did go to America's Incredible Pizza Company. We had a great time Friday night with the family. And I do just want to let you know that in the go-kart race, I did win. My whole family and then like four or five other people. And I got a ribbon in my car to prove it and feeling very good about myself. My driving skills showed up, so that was a good thing. We had a good time. And then, you know, of course, the kids kept playing games. And as we got to choose our prizes, Mary chose those, which was good because I was trying to figure out what to do with them. Because I want to talk to you this morning about lenses. Those lenses are blue, and they really make the world seem blue. In fact, like I said, they not only make the world seem blue, but with those lights, they make it seem nothing but blue, and you can't see anything else. And if you look through it, the shade of everything is blue. Well, imagine it for yourself if you were to wear blue sunglasses, but you were to have a friend to wear red sunglasses. Another person would be wearing yellow sunglasses. And as each person was walking around wearing these different colored glasses, they were looking through these lenses and looking at the world. They would begin to see the world through the lenses that they had on, and it would begin to shape the way they saw everything. And, you know, a group of people having a conversation would say, well, what's the world look like? What's the sky? Or what's the grass look like? And one person would talk about shades of blue, and another person would say, no, it's got kind of a pinkish hue. And another person would say, no, I see yellow hues, and it would all be shaped by the lenses that you were wearing. Now, being trendy and wearing different sunglasses is fun for a while, but imagine if literally we took one of our 4-year-old twins, and when they were just a baby, we put these on, and then not only did they wear them around as they were babies, but they grew up with these lenses on. They wore them all the time. And other than the fact that you would all look at the Hubbards and go, man, that's the biggest group of dorks ever. Why would they make their kids wear that? Eventually, the way they would see the world would be massively shaped by the color of the lenses they had on. And imagine your whole life you wore blue lenses. You had blue lenses, and you looked at everything through blue lenses. You never took them off. It was always on your eyes. You would come to the point eventually where everything you see and the way you perceive the world would all be shaped by the blue lenses that you wear. And you would come to a point where you were convinced that this is the true image. This is the way the world really looks. And the reason I raise this morning is as we are jumping into a new series that is this will be our third week. We're doing a winter spring look at the Old Testament. This great document that tells us this amazing story. And we're theming it one story, one hero, one mission, just as a reminder that the entire Old Testament, not just the Old Testament, the entire Bible, has at the heart this huge, beautiful, wonderful story. And the hero of every small story is still the God who rescues, who saves, and who is on mission. And the mission that he is on is to rescue people like you and me from ourselves, to help us to find our God and to know that God and to be saved by him, to have a relationship with him. Our greatest need is the fact that we are disconnected from our God and that we need God to do for us what we can't do for ourselves. But we live in a world where there are all kinds of different approaches, all kinds of different spiritualities, all kinds of different ways of seeing God, ways of seeing the universe, ways of seeing ourselves in light of that. And this morning, just as we're kind of jumping into this series on the Old Testament, I want to start with the very first verse in the Bible, the start of creation. But what we're going to talk about today is the lenses that people wear as they begin to answer the big questions in life and the way they see the world. And in a very real way, most people have a worldview, which is a set of lenses that is put on them from the time they're born. And it shapes everything that they see. My guess is most of you in here, there's some kind of background or story where Christianity on some level was part of your heritage. There's others of you in here, though, that maybe you grew up in a worldview that was totally different. And maybe you're just exploring, trying to figure this thing out, or you're just curious, or the faith thing is really new to you, and you're figuring out what the lenses look like that you want to perceive and the way you see the world. But a worldview is a set of lenses. And the Bible, at the very first words of the Bible lays its worldview. It lays the set of lenses on the table and basically tells you what its goal is. And the Bible's goal is not to just to create a great spirituality where we find our own way and discover our own path. The Bible from the outset said this is about the one true, the only God. And its goal is for you to see him in all his glory, to be awed at his majesty, and to be drawn to him, to be transformed by him, and to know the true God as opposed to all the other options out there that the Bible will eventually say those are false gods. And so from the get-go, this is the idea. And we live in a culture with all kinds of lenses, all kinds of approaches, all kinds of ways of seeing the world as people put lenses on their eyes. And they see the world. How do we know that the one that we're, you know, talking about this morning is right? Or is it really just that everybody creates their own path to God, that we just kind of come up with our own idea? Nobody really knows for sure who God is. We just create our own path. How do we know? How do we wrestle with this? And as we come together, are we called to one set of beliefs and one kind of core idea of God? Or is there just all kinds of pictures of him? That's what we're going to wrestle with this morning as we start this series on the Old Testament, on this story of one hero. The big idea is that we have to know who that hero is. We have to know who that God is and to be drawn to him and to know him. And that's the goal of the Bible. The goal of the Bible is to show us God and reveal his character, his purpose, his mission. And as we see him, as we have more just being drawn to him and challenged by him, and we see, the more clearly we see God, the more we will be drawn to who he is, and the more our lives will be just be consumed and just blessed by the one true God. But the more we begin to end up with a different images, distortions, a different understanding of who that God is, the more we really get more disconnected, the more internal we will turn and make it about us and not about the glory of our God, and the more we will be distant from that God, and because of that, we will feel disconnected and our lives won't make sense. And so we went to a movie last night, went and saw Les Mis. I will tell you that if you have a chance, take the time. Unbelievable. Especially if you're a follower of Jesus and you understand the gospel, how the gospel is on display in this movie, just the beauty of what happens to a man whose life is changed by the power of grace and forgiveness as he is opposed by the law. But the previews, they showed the preview for this movie that's coming out that is called, Identity Theft. Have any of you seen the previews of it? Oh my gosh, it looks hilarious. I'm not endorsing it here. Haven't seen it, so I don't know. I guarantee you there will be some racy parts, and probably more than I should even mention. But I was the idea of it just looks hilarious as this guy who just looks like a normal, everyday guy swipes his credit card. It gets declined, and it sends him on this journey where there's this person who is using his name, representing with credit cards and all this. I mean, totally has totally stolen his identity. He gets arrested for missing a court date in a state that he hasn't even been to. And he begins to realize that somebody is showing up and with his name, with his old identity, is representing themselves as him and is now totally stealing his identity. And so this person walks up, it's a woman, and this is where the humor of the movie comes up, I guess, but as she walks up, she shows a credit card and swipes a credit card. What she is saying is, I am this person, I think his name is Sandy, I am Sandy, and I am being represented here, I'm giving you a credit card, I'm going to buy this stuff because this is who I am. And this is what's going on. The question that we have to wrestle with is, who has the right to define the identity of God? Can we walk up and just say in any way, this is who my God is, and this is kind of what I believe about him? And if our God is defined by us, he's whoever we make him out to be, the truth is that we may end up just like the movie where we're doing identity theft with our God. And so what the Bible does is the Bible begins very early saying, this is who God is, and this is how we know him. And so if you have a Bible, grab it. Into your rows, there's Bibles for you. We're going to look at two passages real quick. The first passage is the very first verses of scripture in the Bible. And then the second passage we will look at is a little bit later and what a lot of people will call the center of the Old Testament, the place where everything revolves around in the Old Testament. And we'll look at just these verses that tell us, just start giving us an idea of who this God is. So if you in your rows, there's Bibles there we'd love for you to have. If you're a guest, we'd love for you to take one of those Bibles and read along with us, but also see that as our gift to you. We would love for you to take that home, use it, give it to friends, however you want to use it. Well, on that Bible, we'll begin on page one. So the very first page, or the very first, you know, page one, there's some back pages in those Bibles. But page one, and then we'll look at a second scripture here on page 130. Page one, we're just going to read the very first verse. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." As the Bible opens, the opening statement of the Bible, I mean, as God revealed himself, as God spoke, he could have said anything he wanted to. And what God says, the opening statement that is made in the Bible is this: there is a God and there is creation, and they are separate. That God is over creation. We sang the song, "This is my Father's world." There is creator, creation. And in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And so the Bible, right off the bat, lays its cards on the table. The Bible, right off the bat, tells you the lenses it is trying to present. And the challenge that we all have as we wrestle with the way we see the world, the big questions of life, who we are, and how we relate to our spirituality and all this, the question that we always have to wrestle with is not, which set of lenses do I wear? The question we have to try to figure out is, which set of lenses are clear? Which ones really look at reality the way it is? And our goal is not just to defend our position. And even as Christians, we got to be careful of this. We got to be very careful that we think we're right, everybody else is wrong. That's a bad way to approach it. The goal is to wrestle deeply with both what God has said and our lives and the world around it, and to say which set of lenses best represents reality. And my challenge to you is that the reason I keep coming back to the gospel and the Bible is that I don't think there's any other worldview that pictures the world the way it is better and clearer than the biblical worldview of the one God that is revealed in Scripture. And so the Bible right away lays its card on the table. In the beginning, God, one God, created, creator, creation. And then later, as he's speaking to his people in Deuteronomy chapter 6, Deuteronomy chapter 6, page 130 in that Bible. Go ahead and flip over there and read this along with me. As God is speaking to his people, these Old Testament people that we would call the Jews or the Hebrews, the Israelites, Deuteronomy chapter 6, and God is speaking to them about their relationship with him as he is their God, they are his people, and he's trying to help them understand that in a world full of spirituality, a world full of all kinds of approaches, a world full of different ways of seeing God, of seeing the world around them, that he is calling them to know him and to love him. And so look at this, Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning with verse 4, he says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in the house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of the house and on your gates." In other words, what God is saying, this is a passage that Hebrews will call the Shema. And basically the idea is this is their core declaration. As you speak to a person who grew up in a Hebrew background, if they went to a Jewish school where they were taught about the one God, their declaration is, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And we will love the Lord our God with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our might. This is who we are." And kind of at the center of all the Old Testament, what the Old Testament is trying to teach, what the Old Testament is trying to be, is that Old Testament presents all these stories. And there are tons of stories in the Old Testament. But as the Old Testament is presenting all this, what the Bible's trying to get at is this: there is one God, and the goal is to know him, to love him, and to be so consumed by him that it's contagious. That it gets passed on to our kids and to people around us, that we talk about it all the time, that at the center of our lives is the one God who has revealed himself. And the Bible keeps trying to say us, God has not left us guessing. God has spoken. that this God is real and he has spoken, he has revealed himself, he has opened himself to us so that we can know this God. And so God gives us the scriptures, and then he will send Jesus. God becomes a human so that we don't have to guess and wonder about this God. We can know the one true God and to be pursuing him and known by him and have a relationship with that God. So, like, even in this, it talks about you will love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and might. And then it talks about, you know, wearing them on your forehead and on your arm and you know, all, put it on your doorposts everywhere. And you will pass this on to your children. We are passionate about that. We really believe that God has called us to love God and then to lead others to do that, and especially to speak this into our kids. And so Eric even mentioned this morning. A couple things we got going on for this entire series. We're going to do something that's going to be a real challenge for me, to be honest. It's more writing every week, but I just really believe this is something that ought to be going on. Already we, in our community groups, are going to have discussions about what we hear and what we read each week. But what we're going to start doing is every week we're going to publish a sheet. They're out there. You can pick them up on the way out. We want to encourage you to. We're going to publish a sheet that has a few things on it. First of all, we'll have some notes from the sermon just to kind of review what you read. The second thing we'll have is some reading. And we have all kinds of resources that are actually available now at the resource table for like every age group. So we have a Bible that's designed for like 3 to 5 year olds. We have another that's like for older toddlers. We have a Bible that's really designed for and to be used by elementary age kids. We have stuff that's for adults. We have a book out there that's called The Story that is kind of a using, you know, looking at these small stories, but seeing them in light of the big story. And what we will do every week is we will connect what we talk about on stage, the story that we're in or the idea that we're in, we will connect that to the reading in these different Bibles and also the Bible itself. So we'll give some verses, some passages. This week we've got this passage we just read with a few others that you can read that just deals with the idea of a Christian worldview. And then there's in one of the Bibles in the Jesus Storybook Bible, which we highly recommend for toddlers and young children, is a just a great resource. We have a story in there that you can read with them. And then what we're also going to do every week is we're going to publish a family worship. And the idea is we just want to challenge you and encourage you that you will take your family, and whether you have little kids or whether you have teenagers or whether it's just, you know, mom and dad or whatever it looks like in your life, whether it's, you know, whoever you are, whatever your family looks like, you may do this with a few other families or find some other people to join in with this. Just once a week to sit down, we're going to pull a song that we sing on Sunday morning that Eric has found that kind of connects to the theme, and we're going to give you some passages of scripture. We're going to pull some things from a thing called a catechism, which is basically a statements of belief that are designed to teach children. And we're going to have some thoughts for you just to talk about with your kids. And then we're going to encourage you to pray together. And just this time, at least once a week, just to set aside 15, 20 minutes to sing and pray and worship and talk about Jesus with your family and connect to the big idea. And especially when we're doing stories, when we start telling the story of creation or the story of Noah or the story of Abraham, to retell those stories together. And so those will be available. They're available this morning. We'll do this every week and encourage you just... And this way, you are doing what this text says, that there's one God, love him with all your heart, soul, might, and then pass it on. We want to assist you in that, because what we really hope is that we will begin to see God, the one true God, and to know him deeply, and to challenge you to look through a set of lenses that sees the world, I think, clearly, and to be overwhelmed and awed at God and the gospel that he has. And so this morning, we want to talk about the different worldviews, the different ways. We're going to look at the ways other religions, other people look at the world around them, the way that they see and their spirituality is shaped. And then we're going to talk about how we as Christians then should respond to what is called the Christian or the biblical worldview and deal with that for a few minutes. And there's a lot of, you know, a lot of big ideas here, a lot of challenges, a lot of things to think about. You need to hear me clearly this morning. This is not me in arrogance standing up and going, we're right, everybody else is wrong. In fact, I actually strongly believe that if we believe the gospel, if we believe that we were so broken and so sinful that we needed the cross, it always ought to produce humility in us. Okay? And so as we wrestle with this, though, I want us to see this. And there's a couple things. First of all, you may have at one point in time embraced one of these worldviews. But the other challenge is to ask yourself, where do I take the God of the Bible and mix other stuff in? And kind of have a worldview that kind of picks and chooses, kind of more like a salad bar than just knowing the one true God that's revealed in the Bible. The challenge is then to know him. So a worldview is this. What is a worldview? It's the functional framework from which people answer the big questions of life. Or in other words, it's the set of lenses. It actually is over your religion. So whatever your religion is, a worldview actually takes a step higher than that and says, this is the big overarching way the world, your religion sees the world. I was doing just a little research on this. Different websites and different material out there tell us that there's about 21 major world religions. There are, in a book I have that's called Why So Many Gods, which is a really cool little resource that just explains each religion and what it believes and how it pictures the world, but also in the midst of it says how Christianity is different and how it interacts with Christianity and things like that. This book has 57 different religions, and you need to understand, when I say religions, it lists Protestant and Catholic just as the only two Christian. There's Protestant, Catholic, and here's the rest, okay? 57 different world religions. But from that, there are basically five worldviews that each religion somehow can fit under the big idea. And so a worldview is the functional framework from which people answer the big questions in life. And these questions, the questions that are answered by your worldview include these. It includes things like, where did we come from? What's our purpose? Why are we on this planet? Why are we on this big blue ball, and what's the whole reason behind it? What went wrong? You know, every worldview will look and go, man, there's something messed up here. There's something not right. And so what went wrong? How do we fix it? How is this situation improved? Can we make things right? Can we solve the problems in the world? Where are we going? You know, what's the end? Is there a heaven and hell? Is it reincarnation? What's the big idea? And then finally, who or what is God? Is there a God? What does he look like? How does he interact with the world? And so your worldview, answer these questions. What happens is once you start answering these questions, you are beginning to define the set of lenses that you walk around and you see everything this way. Your political views, your way of seeing social interaction, your way of seeing your religion, all these things are affected by the set of lenses that you go around with. And so this morning, what I want to do is I want to walk through the five basic worldviews, show you how almost basically every religion can find its place in one of these in some way, shape, or form, and then talk to you about how then the gospel is different. How the gospel is different. And so here's the first worldview. The first worldview is a worldview of theism. The idea that there is one God, or monotheism, if you want to call it that, theism, the idea that there is one God. And the idea is that we have a personal God. He is creator. He is over all. He governs everything. There is creator, creation. And there's one God who is overall, who's sovereign, who controls everything. In a theistic worldview, the problem is some kind of sinfulness, that God is some kind of moral being. He's a personal God, and we, in some way, shape, or form, are disconnected with that God because of the way we live our lives. Okay? And so I've got some illustrations up here for you just to help you see that. Here's a picture of theism here. All right, so let me just explain. I'll explain this once and then you'll get it, and then all of these make the same thing. The green circle represents everything that is in terms of the natural order. This is our world, this is the universe, this is the sun and the stars, this is animals. I mean, everything that we would consider creation, see that pictured in that green circle, okay? So in all the way through that, in all of these slides, when I show you, I will show you a green circle, and all of them, the created everything that exists is inside that green circle. And in theism, what basic theism, go back to the slide, go back to the slide. In theism, back to the slide. That, right there. In theism, what the theistic worldview, the religions that hold the theistic worldview, is that there is a God and he is outside and over the creation. He is separate. He is different. There's creator, creation. And the problem, like I said, is some kind of sin, some kind of brokenness. And usually, in most of them, the theistic worldviews, where they land in terms of how it's fixed, is some kind of moral improvement. Now, there's three major world religions that are theistic. Anybody know what they are? You want to throw them out to me? Time to wake up and do a little audience participation. Judaism's one of them. Very good. What's another one? Islam's the second one. What's the third one? Christianity. Good. I was hoping y'all would get that one since we're here this morning, all right? Since we already said there's one God. We talked about that. All right, good. Three basic world religions that hold to theism, one God. And so the core idea of the worldview of theism is that there is one God. He is outside and over creation. Now, that does not mean that everybody who holds a theistic worldview ultimately believes in the same God that we believe in. But the core of their worldview is very similar. But Christianity answers a couple of the big questions very differently. We'll talk about that. But theism is the first worldview. Now, the second worldview is a worldview that we're going to call naturalism. Or atheism might be another way to put it, but naturalism. And this is a belief there is no God. That ultimately all that exists is all that exists. There's nothing outside of creation. Creation is all there is. And so here's how it's kind of pictured, that the green thing is that's it. The created order is all that exists. There's nothing outside of this. This is the worldview you will encounter when you go to the zoo. It is assumed when you walk through the exhibits at the zoo and the children's zoo, it is just assumed. This is the worldview that is functionally taught in most college, especially secular, or most science classrooms, especially if you were to go to a secular college. Most of them, not all of them, but most of them will just assume this worldview and basically say, if you don't come with this worldview, you don't have a whole lot of say in our situation, in our culture. But naturalism is a worldview that sees that there's no God, there is only creation. There was a guy named Carl Sagan who kind of became the spokesperson about 30 years ago for this, and he had a show on PBS called Cosmos. And the beginning of every Cosmos episode started with a quote that went something like this. The cosmos is all that ever has been and all that ever will be. There is nothing else but the cosmos. And then he went on to explain how everything just by random chance, by Big Bang and all that kind of stuff. Now, today, there is another show that begins with this, okay? And so it's even opening song begins with an explanation of the naturalistic worldview. And we've got this in a video for you, so check this out. Anybody watch that show? A lot of hands going up. Pretty funny, isn't it? Let's be honest, pretty funny. Now, I'm going to show you three different videos. Let me make a disclaimer right here, okay? I just raised my hand. I watch the show. I think it's funny. But as I show the videos, it's not like, oh, don't watch these are evil, okay? It's just the way people see the world. We need to be aware of worldviews, even interact in a culture with the worldviews. So this is not, if I show you something, that's our, like, blanket disclaimer, this is bad, shouldn't watch it, okay? So, but that whole show has, as its foundation, both the song and as you go into the show, a scientific approach to things that begins with a naturalistic worldview. Now, I'm not going to chase the science creation thing here, not go into that. But here's what I will say about this, okay? That often people come to conclusions because it supports their worldview. And so you put people in a room, and some of them, all of them are scientists, multiple PhDs, multiple levels of education, massively gifted in the sciences. You put people in a room, and one guy has a theistic worldview. And he really, really strongly sees evidence all throughout the sciences for design. And you put somebody else in the room, and they are naturalists. The lenses that they wear are naturalistic. They don't believe in God, and they believe everything happened by random chance. And you put those people in a room, and they're going to look at the same set of evidence, the same set of data, the same set of material, and it's amazing how they will end up with two sets of conclusions. I used to have a really good friend, a guy I loved deeply, who had two PhDs in different biological things, and I forget what they were in, but I mean, high level of science. And he worked for a while Monsanto, and then they changed their names and all this kind of stuff. And he was a genetic engineer. And I always thought it was the project he was working on for them, I just thought was the coolest thing because they were trying to come up with blue cotton. He was trying to genetically engineer cotton to make it blue. You know why? Blue jeans. They'd never have to dye blue jeans again if they came up with blue cotton. When he got moved from the project, they had gone from white cotton, they had made it green, which wouldn't work for blue jeans, but it was on the way, right? Really knew it. I had a conversation one time about what it was like to work in the world where some of these things are assumed, and it's just the worldview that's purported. And he talked about how it really is dangerous to try to hold a theistic thing, but he will sit in a lab and two, like a guy sitting at a table will look at data, and his eyes, he just sees this and goes, man, what great evidence of the Creator. What great evidence that there is a designer who orchestrated the world to be a certain way. And sitting right next to him is a guy who sees the same evidence that says, see, this just proves evolution. And the point is that people come to these things, you come to conclusions often because you start with a worldview. And you see everything through the lenses that you see them in. And so naturalism is a second worldview. It's a way of seeing the world. As Galileo approached this, obviously a science, he tried to affirm for us, listen, the Bible is not primarily a science book where the Bible teaches truth that is true, but the Bible's not trying to answer all the scientific questions. It's trying to answer worldview questions. And I love this quote he said, the Bible shows us the way to go to heaven, not the way the heavens go. It's not the purpose of the Bible, but there is a worldview that is being purported. And once we leave that worldview, maybe we're leaving something that's important in the whole idea of Christianity. So naturalism, second worldview. Third worldview is this, the worldview of pantheism. Pantheism worldview is basically the belief that everything is God, God is everything, that all is one, that there is a it's called monism is another way to put it. It's everything, both God and creation are the same thing. So let me show this in slide form, okay? That the created order has this spiritual dimension, this spiritual realm, this energy. In most pantheistic worldviews, religions, the energy is an impersonal force kind of thing, an impersonal God who doesn't have morals and character, and it's more of an energy that binds and holds everything together. The major world religions that come out of this are Hinduism, if you're familiar with what is called the New Age movement, but the idea is that everything is God, God is everything, that the problem in the world is that there is a divine spark inside of us, but what we do is rather than pursuing the divine, we keep our distinctions. That you as a person, the distinctions that makes you a person are just illusions. The goal is to eventually through, lifetime after lifetime, through reincarnation and starting again, you eventually move up to the point where you come to enlightenment, which enlightenment is where you reach the point where you realize that you are not a distinct person, that you are part of this energy, this divine. Our problem is that we're God and we don't know we're God, which I always think is kind of funny because that's not much of a God. But at the end, that's kind of the idea. Now, a little video to show you how this is illustrated in a place where this worldview is actually kind of taught. And once again, love the movie, but just pay attention to what happens here, all right? So.
It's in the rocks and trees all around you, it is. Mm-hmm.
The idea here is that there is an energy, a force, and that it's not creator creation, it's creator and creation, or God and humanity, the force and the what we would call the creative realm are one, that there is a spiritual energized dimension to the world and everything has this energy. The whole idea is how do we harness it? How do we use it? Now, this kind of spirituality is pretty awesome because if it's true, at the end, you and I can have great power by which we can force God to do what we want. So later in this, he uses the force to lift, this giant spaceship out. And, later in the whole movies, it's the force that gives Luke the power to be this great Jedi and all this kind of stuff. It's the force controls him, but he controls the force. And there's this great energy, this idea of an impersonal God. The problem isn't sin. The problem isn't that I have moral character flaws and need redemption. The problem is that I'm divine. I just need to discover the divinity that is within me. And the way I do that is through one life after another. So one of the ways you know if a worldview, a religion has what's called a pantheistic worldview is if it embraces reincarnation on some level. But the problem is that reincarnation ends up with a wicked twin brother. And that wicked twin brother is called karma. And karma is one of the most evil tricks that I believe Satan has played on the human race. As out of this religion, they basically tell you that if you lived your last life in a bad way, which is amazing because there's no morals in pantheistic religion. So I don't know how anything is judged on whether you were a, you know, a good possum or not, or a good person or not. I don't know how you know that, because they would say there's no such thing as good and evil. It's all one and all this kind of stuff. But if you were bad, you build up this karma, which is this evil, you know, this evil like bank account that the next life when you come back, you have to work that off. To move towards enlightenment, you have to work that off. And we live in a world that's really, there's a lot of this monism, this one, you know, the spirituality that is in our culture. It's everywhere. It's amazing how much it kind of seeps into the church. And it's amazing how many people are embracing both old and new religions in our culture, celebrities and people like this that are just all about this. But they have missed what this has done in India. You do realize that India, in terms of natural resources, is the richest country in the world. And it has the poorest cities. It's not because people aren't wealthy. It's because the idea of this karma that comes from this recycle that I have to pay for my wickedness in the last life and this life creates this thing called the caste system, where if you're born a beggar, your only hope for the next life is to go through this life as the best beggar and work it off through suffering. If you're born a wealthy person, it must mean your last life was good. And therefore, you live as a good wealthy person. You could keep moving up in the scope of things, and eventually you could find enlightenment. But if you're a beggar, it means that your karma is against you. And the only way not to come back the next life with a worse situation is to work your karma off in this one. People who hold this worldview in America miss this somehow. And they miss it on the streets of Calcutta. There are people who are born in places where there's wealth everywhere, but they're born beggars and nobody will touch them. And those mothers will take their children and cut their arms off and cut their feet off, thinking they're loving their child. Because if that child goes through this life and suffers, at least in the next life, they will come back higher. And you know who builds the orphanages in India? It's not people who believe in this worldview. It's Christians who go in and build orphanages and try to impact the poor and try to help them see this way of seeing the world. There is a Redeemer who has rescued you from your bad karma. He has died on the cross for your bad karma. But see, this worldview holds this. Most people want to ignore that. They like the spirituality part. They like the force. They like all this stuff. They don't like that. They kind of ignore that portion of it. We need to be careful in Christianity that this seeps in. So that's the third worldview. Fourth worldview is a worldview we'll call polytheism, many gods. And in the religions that hold this, things like in the past, if you study Greek mythology, this is this, where there's multiple gods and usually creation and everything that is in the world came from some kind of interaction. Usually the gods are fighting and it spins off creation and the mess in the world really doesn't come from humans. We're just here destined to fate. The gods fight and they battle and as they interact with each other, the worlds and everything that is exists. But it's some kind of interaction between all these gods. The created order comes as a result of what they do. There are not a lot of mythology type religions, although there are some that are growing right now. The re-embracing of ancient Greek mythology and some of the ideas of the multiple gods and that kind of thing. But there is a world religion that is the fastest growing by number of people percentage-wise that is polytheistic. Anybody know what the fastest growing world religion that is polytheistic is? Mormonism. People say Mormons are Christians. Mormons have a completely different worldview. They actually believe that there's all kinds of gods and that as really the way you can evolve to Godhead, you can become a god, and as this is one of the phrases they will use, as we are now, God once was, and as God is now, we can become. In other words, if you will live as a good Mormon on this earth under the one God that is, you know, that governs our world, that God will help you move towards becoming a God yourself. And if you become a God yourself, you can get your world and you can govern it the way you want to. That's basically the way Mormons see the world. But they're polytheistic. They don't believe in one God. In the beginning, God. They believe in the beginning. Or they don't believe in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. They believe in the beginning, God gave us this earth and he's over this one. and that Jesus is just the first created being. Totally different way of seeing the world. So polytheism is the fourth worldview. And then the fifth worldview is a worldview we're going to call postmodernism. That name comes from a lot of just looking at culture, and there's this whole discussion of what modernism is and postmodernism is. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just hang with me. Don't worry about that. Let me explain the idea, though. The idea, and this is probably of all of these that I put up here, this is the one that is the most prevalent and most just everywhere in our culture. Postmodernism looks at the world like this and says, man, there are so many different spiritualities. There are all these world religions, but even underneath every world religion, there are all these segments and broken off pieces to where really there are as many religions as there are people in the world. And because there's so many approaches, so many ways to get to God, so many ways of doing this, the outcome is that nobody can really stand up and say they're right. And what the postmodern worldview does is it says, we're not going to focus on who God is. We're just going to focus on the spirituality of the seeker. That you are a spiritual person, that you have your own idea of God, that you have your own pursuit of God. Just go after your idea of God, but you pursue your spirituality. And they'll create all kinds of ways to do that, approaches, images. But at the end of the day, if you are a Christian and you hold to the Christian God, be spiritual. Pursue that. If you're a Jew, pursue that. If you're a Hindu, pursue that. And the first people say is, but wait a minute, we're talking about different gods. They're not the same. And to a postmodern spirituality person, they will say that doesn't matter. That really we're like a bunch of people who are on the side of a mountain, and all of us are on a path, and we're just kind of walking the path. We're taking our journey up the mountain, walking through life, and your journey is yours. The way you cut through the woods, which rocks you jump over, the way you cut is your journey. But what will happen is when we get to the top of the mountain, we will discover that at the top of the mountain, we were all on the same journey, and we will meet there. And so the issue isn't who God is, it's just pursue your own spirituality. And kind of the big postmodern thing is we got to be tolerant, which I agree with, but tolerance does not mean embracing all worldviews. Tolerance means that we allow freedom of expression and we love people who differ with us. But in the midst of this, tolerance for them means that we also give up the idea of any idea of truth with a capital T. And the Bible begins with, in the beginning, God is making a truth claim with a capital T, a truth that is true whether you believe it or not, a truth that is true whether you follow it or not, a truth that is true whether you hold to it or not. And what the Bible's trying to present to us is a set of lenses that says there is one God. He has revealed himself. The goal is not to come up with my own spirituality. The goal is to know God. But even that statement that I just made in postmodern spirituality would be rejected as me being arrogant, me being, you know, self-exalting. But this is what the Bible's trying to bring us to. Now, there is a pastor of this in America. In fact, this person is actually called America's pastor. Once again, if you watch this show, this is not me going, don't watch her. Watch it, enjoy it. But just pay attention when you listen. When Oprah jumps into spirituality, pay attention to what she's really saying. So I got a clip, and I want you to hear what she says, because she's going to make the claim to be a Christian and then embrace all kinds of different stuff. So listen to this. All right, quiz time. Whoa, that was loud there. Quiz time real quick, okay? She stood up and said, I'm a Christian. Here's my question for you. Of the other four worldviews, which one did she profess? She's giving you the opposite. She actually threw out a worldview that was one of the four I gave you. She gave a classic description of pantheism. There's a spiritual life, a spiritual force, a divinity within all of us. That's pantheism. That is not Christianity, okay? Now, here's my point. Once again, some of you are going to go, oh, God, I can't believe she threw Oprah out. If you watch Oprah, that's great. Not a big deal. Watch Big Bang. Watch Star Wars. Just be aware of how the culture is always trying to give you clues to attack your worldview and just be aware of how often we just embrace and pull into ourselves these other ways of seeing the world. And what happens, what the Bible wants to call you to is this journey of reading the Bible and seeing the one God that is and how he acts. And so even though I told you that it's one of the theistic worldviews, the Christian God, the God of the Bible, the God who's revealed himself, there is something that is drastically different than all these other approaches, okay? And at the end of the day, what every single spiritual approach that we just gave you, all the other worldviews will tell you this, except naturalism, but there's a salvation in naturalism too that has the same idea. They will tell you that there is some kind of spirituality or some kind of issue, and then they will say there is a problem. And that problem has to be fixed. So you have a God, you have a problem, and with that God, there's a problem. What every religion does, now catch this, what every religion does is it says, with God who exists and the problem that is, there is a path then that you take to solve the problem, okay? In Islam, there is a God. Our problem is some kind of human rebellion and sinfulness. And if you will do the five pillars of Islam and believe the six pillars of belief, you will become a good Muslim, which means you are rebuilding the bridge to God. If you are a Hindu, there is a whole system. If you are a Buddhist, it is the eightfold path. If you are in all these other religions, if you grew up Baptist, and you don't hear the gospel clearly, what you will hear is there is a God, you're a sinner, now quit drinking, quit smoking, quit chewing, quit dating the wrong girls, make sure you do everything right, get your morals right, and God will like you if you are a good person. If you grew up Catholic, it will go like this, there is a God, I'm a sinner, and if I do the sacraments, everything will be okay. It doesn't matter where we come from, what happens is in spirituality, we will see there is a God, there is a problem. Here is the way I fix the problem. And here's how Christianity is different. Here's why I can stand in front of you and say, I believe the Bible presents a very clear worldview. The Bible tells us there is a God and there is a problem. The problem is our human sinfulness, our rebellion. We are disconnected from our God. We are broken. We are far from Him. We have no hope. And here's what the Bible says. And there's nothing you can do to fix it. Nothing. You can't work your way there because you'll never be good enough. You can't earn your way or do morals because you'll always fail. And at the end of the day, what you will do is you will create your own spirituality, which ultimately is making you to be God. You make God in your image. You create your own path. You dictate your own life. And what Christianity, what the gospel is that in that state, God does not tell me to come to Him. God came to me. The difference between Christianity, the gospel, and every other approach is that the Bible story is that God created and then God rescues. That Jesus came. And the story is not here's how you improve yourself. The story is God has rescued us from the mess we're in. And the story is not here's how I fix. The story is that God is fixing. The story is about Him. And so, the big idea is that I come and I pursue the biblical worldview means that I begin to move towards God and who He is to see Him clearly and to see this great story, which means that I come to realize that there's one God. As I realize that there's one God, I begin to love that God. The reason the Bible calls us to love God with all of our heart, the only way you can do that is if you see what He's done for you. You see that I can't solve this problem. I can't fix me. I can't fix the world I'm in. There's no way of overcoming this. There's no path. There's no journey I can go on that's going to fix this. But God has come, and I begin to see what He's done for me. The only thing I can do is worship and love Him. And as I see that greatness of that, I want to love Him and pass it on. I will know that the Lord is one. I'll know this. I will love Him. I will live with Him at the center, and I will move towards Him in faith. I will allow Him to teach me truth. He is the truth. And then I'll love the one true God. And so that's kind of what the Bible's calling us to. As we do the story, what I want you to be clear on is God, creation. But the story is not how does creation make itself right with God. It's how is God going to rescue His creation from the mess we've made of it. Let's pray. Jesus, we love You this morning. Pray that You've helped us see some things, the lenses that we tend to wear. And I pray that as we've seen the lenses that we tend to wear, you will challenge us, Lord, to be very careful of the way we embrace things that aren't really You. But we will begin to let You define Yourself and show Yourself to us. And Lord, thank You for Jesus who came and died for us and gave His life for us. We love You for that. In Your name I pray. Amen.